This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Admiral Jim Stavridis. United States Navy retired. His new book is To Risk It All, Nine Conflicts in the Crucible of Decision. It is December 7th, 1941 on USS West Virginia, a battleship, a dreadnought, tied up in Pearl Harbor and now being attacked by the wave after wave of Japanese warplanes. This is the moment that begins the crisis for the U.S. Navy. A Cook third class, Doris Dory Miller from Waco, Texas, African-American, is spending that day, it's a Sunday, on board with his friends. And yet the attack comes and they're told to go to general quarters. At that moment, Doris Dory Miller makes decisions that I don't understand how he came to this level of heroism. And he stayed there all day. He must have known he wasn't going to survive.
Indeed. You can only look at this as an act of pure courage, pure heroism. He literally charges to the sound of the guns. He goes to the bridge of the ship where his captain has been mortally wounded, but he helps evacuate the captain from the bridge. And then most famously, he goes down to a gun deck. There's a crew-served single anti-aircraft gun. He doesn't know how to operate it. He hasn't been trained to do that. He and a couple of his shipmates kind of figure it out. He straps himself into this gun and starts shooting down Japanese aircraft, despite the fact that the deck's on fire, the bullets are whizzing by him, Japanese torpedoes are hitting the ship. It's literally sinking in the harbor. It's a remarkable scene of courage. If you want to get a visualization of it, there's a pretty good movie called Pearl Harbor, the actor playing it does a marvelous job depicting Dory Miller's real courage, Cuba Gooding Jr. It's a fantastic scene. And by the way, here's the punchline. He does survive that day, but tragically, a year and a half later, he's on another ship that's torpedoed. He's lost at sea and dies during the war. Final punchline. U.S. Navy, about a year and a half ago, announced our next big, beautiful nuclear aircraft carrier will be the USS Dory Miller. Normally, they're named after presidents. I'd say Dory Miller has his day, and I'm proud to see it.
You were introduced to Dory Miller when you were training for to be a steam engineer. I'm not quite sure what the right term is, on the old steam Navy, and you were presented with a picture of Dory Miller, and the name of the ship was Dory Miller. That's now retired. What was it? It was a frigate, right? A frigate class that you regarded as not exactly the best kind of ship to go to war in. But the important thing about Dory Miller is that this is the segregated Navy.
Yes.
This is 1941, when not only was segregation complete, but Dory Miller wasn't permitted. Although he joined the Navy and although he took the risk with the thousands on West Virginia, wasn't permitted to be more, not even a cook. He couldn't even be a cook. He had to be a cook assistant. And what is striking, Jim, is you remind me, this segregation did not start in the Revolutionary War period or even in the Civil War. It started afterwards. Yeah. It's a projection of the Jim Crow South of the post-Civil War period.
It is indeed. And it makes Dory Miller's story all the more remarkable. By the way, he was physically a big guy. I mean, he's 6'4" tall, 250 pounds. He's a boxing champion of the Pacific Fleet. Really, he's an instinctive protector. And he was asked once, you know, how did you become such a good boxer? And he said, well, it's because my parents named me Doris, a girl's name. That's when I learned how to fight. I just wish I could go out and have a beer with Dory Miller and toast the fact that the next nuclear aircraft carrier will be named after him.
Also, the heroism. You mentioned him taking up a gun position and firing back at the Japanese. He stayed on board till like 4 p.m, pulling his shipmates out of the water. They were swimming in fuel oil, and which was toxic and poisoning them. And with his strength, he was able to reach over as the ship. I picture it. What was it leaning to? It was sliding sideways, wasn't it, Jim? It was. The captain was dead. The command was incomplete because the deck is burning. The water's burning. They don't know if the Japanese are coming back. He could have left the ship by hand over hand a line to a ship next door, but he stayed on board. There was nobody ordering to do that.
No. If anything, he was ironically disobeying orders. The order to abandon ship had already been given, but Dory Miller chose to stand and deliver for his shipmates in a moment of extreme risk. He risked it all, and I continue to marvel at his heroism. And by the way, John, he was awarded for that the Navy Cross, the highest decoration of the U.S. Navy and the second highest of the nation, personally pinned on his chest by Chester Nimitz, the admiral we spoke of recently. Again, there is so much to admire about Dory Miller.
Prepare to execute. Not perfect, but a good plan. And with your permission, Admiral, the person who exemplifies this best, and you mention him in the book, is Commander Ernest Evans of the Johnston. How so?
Ernest Evans, first of all, great backstory. He's three quarters Native American. He's the first Native American to go to the Naval Academy. He rises through the ranks. He's the captain of this brand new destroyer, the Johnston. And he's part of this Battle of Leyte Gulf that we talked about. At the moment when Bill Halsey is steaming away fruitlessly to the north, drawn away by this decoy, all that's left between the landing force of Douglas MacArthur and a massive Japanese force of battleships and cruisers, 10 times the size of these tiny destroyers, all that's left is a handful of what we call tin cans in the U.S. Navy. And so Ernest Evans gets on the announcing system with his crew and says, look, things aren't looking good, but we're going to do what we can to defend this landing force. And they charge these massive Japanese battleships. In Navy parlance, this is called the last stand of the tin can sailors. It's a beautiful, heroic story. Those destroyers are sunk. Johnston goes to the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. It was recently discovered. Another one, the Samuel B. Roberts, was just discovered a week or so ago. They're down at the bottom of the ocean. Their captains are with them in all probability. Ernest Evans dies. We never recover his body. He's awarded the Medal of Honor. It is a moment where he knows this is not going to turn out well, but he charges. Boy, do I admire Ernest Evans.
Because of your introduction, I remember reading the book many years ago, The Last of the Tin Can Navy, but I got the audible and listened to the detailed scenes of when he makes the decision. He didn't communicate with any admiral. He just made the decision to turn the ship around. And let me emphasize what he was looking at coming over the horizon. This is early in the morning. 27 Japanese warships of great size, cruiser division, and were there four battleships? I know the Yamato was there.
Including the Yamato, the largest warship ever built.
Which fired a shell, I think of it as 5 feet or 6 feet tall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And these shells didn't have to hit the destroyer. Yeah. They could just hit near it and tear it apart. And the details of what happened to the Johnston and then the other ships as they were pummeled and yet kept up the smoke, which was necessary. And also they fired all of their torpedoes. There's nothing like this in the Navy. I don't know. You know more history than I do. This has to be a singular event, Jim.
It absolutely is. And here's what happens. The Japanese ships destroy these destroyers, but the captain, the admiral on the battleship force thinks, my God, there must be American battleships and cruisers and carriers back there. In other words, it's a bluff. It's an incredible bluff carried out by these destroyers. And the Japanese fleet turns around and departs the area. And oh, by the way, the Japanese, who are famous in this Second World War for their cruelty and the manner in which they look at the American Navy as cowardly, those Japanese warships actually saluted the American Navy and the courage of those destroyers when they turned around and left. Bill Halsey was very lucky. There was an Ernest Evans back there guarding that landing force.
The book is To Risk It All, Nine Conflicts in the Crucible of Decision. Admiral James Stavridis, United States Navy, retired, is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.